I showed you this.
Yeah, you have a Wu-Tang tattoo. And I have a Wu-Tang coffee cup.
Yep.
We're officially middle-aged white men.
Yes.
All right. You ready?
You want to do the countdown?
I'll do it.
All right.
One, two, three.
Perfect.
Putrid.
Yeah, beautiful, right?
Putrid.
You said putrid?
Putrid. So how was your week, Amir?
Oh, pretty good. Let me just stop you there. Yeah.
You went, oh, pretty good.
Oh, well, so
oh,
the reason I went, oh, because how I thought about oh, what I did to myself and my body on Friday.
Did you drink a little too hard?
Oh, are you kidding me? Very much so. But that's why I went, oh, first. Then I realized, wait. The rest of the week, from Monday to Friday, I was exercising every day and eating healthy. So I was like feeling really good. But I ruined my week on Friday. And I was in bed all Saturday, made it to the couch, walked the dog, came home. When I was on the couch in a puddle of sweat. It was a gazillion degrees outside. Sunday, I didn't recover either. It wasn't until this morning that I went for a morning walk and felt refreshed and had a healthy breakfast.
Well, lucky us. Yeah. We've got you at your best, huh?
Yeah. And how was your week?
It was good. I actually worked in my studio for most of the week, and I kind of destroyed myself too, because as hard as we claim being a designer is, sitting in an office chair for 3 straight months is nothing compared to working in a sweaty studio. And so the first couple of days I came home pretty tore up, and I wore the wrong attire to be standing and carrying stuff all.
Did you bike there?
No, I could. So I kind of like you. I live at the top of a big hill too, and so yeah. I could get to my studio in about 5 minutes, but it would take me 2 hours to ride home because it's
yeah, exactly.
It would take That's 2 hours because I was walking.
You need to get an electrical bike. Or
no, we don't.
It's
do
just
that
easier
here.
To walk.
We don't have electric bikes here, Amir. We don't.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh, that sucks.
We don't. If you have an electric bike or a moped or anything like that, it's because you got too many DUIs.
Disability?
DUI.
DUI. Oh yeah, of course. So you drive to work?
Yeah. Whenever I go down there, yeah.
Is it hard to walk there?
Because no, you could walk. Really, I mean, it's like 3 miles from my house. So it's not too bad. But then once I got there, I hadn't been in there in a while because of you know. And so I had to kind of spend the first couple of days just kind of cleaning and getting everything ready so that I could work. I always call it setting myself up for success.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it was a good week. It was a pretty good week. I've been working on some pretty cool stuff. And hopefully by the time this comes out, people will be seeing that stuff because it's pretty topical stuff I've been working on.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Some current events related things I've been doing.
Oh no. I just want the current events to fucking stop.
Well.
I heard there's a meteor coming for Earth.
It might.
And according to someone, they said they misread the Mayan calendar and we're getting nuked in about a couple of days from now.
Well, I better hurry up and edit this podcast then so that everybody can end it on a good note.
So if you're hearing this, we survived it. But I just read an article and I saw, like, it was someone who tweeted it out, like, oh, they misread the Mayan calendar. We have 4 days. And everyone was sounds like, right. Yes, hurry up, get it on.
I'd like, better get to painting.
Yeah. But anyway.
What else going on?
I've been starting to love something design related. I'm starting to love the iPad Pro.
Oh, that's right. You got one. You don't.
Yeah.
You haven't really. You haven't really busted out on the scene with your iPad Pro like some of us have.
Yeah, exactly. I've been just trying it out, and I feel like, maybe I'll do something. I did the. Actually, people aren't supposed to know this because we're supposed to keep secret who does the.
All of our
stuff.
Everything.
But I drew that rat on my iPad Pro.
Right. And then I drew the most recent rat on my iPad Pro, and you immediately said, can you send me a vector version of this?
Yes.
Which I was like, I drew it on a fucking iPad, dick.
I did a light trace, cleaned it up a little bit. It was perfect.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Good deal.
So, yeah. I'm just working on it, and we had a big series of illustrations for a client, and I did like the bulk of like, I did all the sketches on it in seconds, like minutes, but yeah, really quick. And got those approved, and then I had like just drawing. They were pretty like, some of them I did mostly on an Illustrator with mouse, as I usually do, but I went pretty hard on like drawing some of the elements out on the iPad Pro, and it saved me hours. It was great.
That's the thing, and it's cool. We're not getting paid by Procreate or anybody else. You're using Procreate, I assume. Is that what you said? Yeah.
So I'm waiting for the Adobe shit to come out, but
you won't switch over. You'll just keep Procreate, I promise you. But are you sure? It's interesting because I drew my whole life, and I switched to an iPad, and it saved me so much time. But you're not you don't draw like that.
So, no, I don't draw like that.
So how does that work for you? Does it make you better, or just, I mean,
yeah, a lot,
really?
Because when I was young, like I drew all the time. I just started out in those days when it was such a hassle to get stuff over from pen and paper to the computer, blah blah blah. So I just decided that I'll just learn how to do it with a mouse because it's gonna be easier. In the long run, and then technology evolved over the years, and now it's easier if I would have just started. But I don't know. I'm getting back into it because I know I draw, but it's so many years since I did it by hand like that that it's.
I drew an owl.
It's coming back. It's coming back.
I drew an owl. Is that interesting?
Very interesting.
Very interesting. I did. Yeah. So imagine an owl. I drew one.
Wow.
That's cool. Amazing. That's cool that that's happening. I actually. Reverted, and I have just painted. So I was with a paintbrush. Yeah, yeah. So I've been painting a big mural, and that's fun.
Cool.
So yeah, I'm gonna be working on it all this week, and excited about that. It's always fun to do some tactile things with your hands where you can get dirty. I don't typically get dirty, but you know, every now and then I'll get a little. I'll strategically place a little paint splatter on my pants so that people know that I'm an artist as well as
I've seen
designer.
You get pretty dirty, but that was before you stopped drinking gin.
That's true. That is true.
Oh, and I had one more thing. I had some copyright issues for a client that set me back like 3 days.
So they were copying you or you were copying them?
No, it was horrible. We did I'm not gonna say who it is, just because of legal stuff, because there was lawyers involved and stuff like that.
Wow.
I worked with a brand and did a whole line of.
Let's call it Under Armour. No, wait, that's horrible. No, don't call it that.
No, it was just a brand for a specific niche of sports. And we did. I came up with a concept idea that was going to go through the whole collection.
Right.
And they were like, "Oh, we like that. Let's try that out." I made it, and they liked it, and we stuck with it. And it was like, it was implemented in a lot of the designs for the collection.
Sure.
And everything was approved, paid up. I sent over all the files. It was a lot of files because it was a whole collection for summer. Fall. I can't even remember anymore. This project had my life turned upside down. So after I sent everything over, they wanted to post some promo shots of it. And they immediately got hit up by this other brand, because we had been researching this concept we did because it was pretty minimalist.
Right.
So we had been researching it and we couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah.
We found like sort of similar ideas, but no one had done it like we did it. So we did it, and of course to get hit up with like from another brand, it was really small. Same niche, same sport. Right.
So yours was a check mark, but theirs was a swoosh type thing.
It was identical. It was horrible.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, it was almost like if I had copied it. It was so close to what we had done. And I was like, oh, no. And they got contacted by a dude, and then like they got a cease and desist from a lawyer. So
Was it one element or all the elements?
Yeah.
Just one element
okay. that we used throughout the whole thing. We used it on in different designs in different ways, like different lockups and stuff.
Wow.
But it was so, like, they had printed lots of material with that for their brand. Their brand was super small, much smaller than the brand I was working with.
Now, the client, do they believe you that it was a coincidence, or do they?
I think so. Because I was like, I was like, oh, this is just unbelievable. Because I had told them about the concept, and I told them that I've done some research on it. I couldn't find anything like it, and they couldn't either. So
yeah.
When we were hit up, we were like, this is just maximum bad luck. But I just figured out a new concept. And it just took a while because I had to do the new concept. This was going to print.
Well, too, you're also probably kind of bummed out.
Oh, yeah, that too. But I mean,
that
I was
will
just
depress
like,
the
just,
shit out of you. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was like, let's just fix it and try to resolve this as fast as possible.
Right.
But it was first like getting a new concept idea that they liked. Working that out and then getting that new design approved, which was pretty quick, but still. And we had to just figure out how to implement it into all the other designs, change up all these files for the thing. And
it took
so much time. And I just had to drop all my other client work and just email everybody. It's like, full disclosure, I'm having a copyright issue with this.
Yeah.
I have to fix this for them.
Yeah,
everyone was really understanding and cool about it. So
yeah, I learned kind of the last year. I had one where I got a cease and desist, and it was just a style. You know, something stylistically caused confusion. You know, it didn't look like anything anybody had done, but it was just you got to be careful. So even like a style that is similar to something else, you know, they'll come and they'll fuss at you. And I have an issue where like I have this sort of photographic memory, and so whenever I come up with an idea that looks like it's like somebody's had to have done this before, I will just search the shit out of it and send it to people and be like, what does this look like? And I really beat it up before I decided it was actually mine.
Most of the time I just ignore, like, because I get those all the time because a lot of my stuff gets posted online and
it gets
a decent amount of exposure. There's always people who think that, oh, you made a man holding a bowling ball? I've done that.
Right.
You got to take that down. And you're like, ignore, delete. Like, you don't give a shit because it's so stupid. But this was so niche and so specifically, like, spot on the exact same concept. And we, like, I don't know. Also, if they don't have it copyrighted, you're still in the clear, because then you can just copyright it if you want to be a real asshole and just tell them to take theirs down. But this was actually copyrighted, a trademark. And,
that's a shame, but it worked out.
Happens.
Well, my thought too has always been like, if you came up with one good idea, you can come up with one more.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was bummed for like 5 minutes, and I was like, let's just solve it.
Yeah. Well, you're not bummed. You're not bummed because you got to do the work again. You're bummed because it was the oversight.
Yeah, exactly.
Like seeing that, having somebody show you that, and it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah. And it was, I want to tell you what it is.
No, don't worry.
Do it on the,
you can tell me off
air.
And then whenever people see you in real life, they'll be just dying to hear what this was. It was a brand of curling brooms or something that you did.
Exactly. So, I mean, that shit happens, you know.
Yeah.
I've become very emotionally detached compared to work. Well, I'm still emotionally attached to my work, but much less so than I used to be.
Yeah.
Like, I'm more into focusing on finishing up, getting paid, than like, oh, it has to look like this, and I have to get this through, and I really want them to go with this kind of, like, I just want to finish up, make it as good as possible, and
and let deliver. It go. Let somebody else own it.
Yep, exactly. So that's been like over the last couple of years. I used to be much more like, for a long time, I think a lot of designers struggle with that they're very emotionally attached to their thing, but now I'm not.
I've worked for some non-glamorous, really big brands that you make a mark for, and almost the first application they fuck it up so bad that you would never tell people that you made that logo. So
exactly,
I've done that for a lot of my career, actually.
Yeah. That's what you just got to get used to it, because the more work you do, the more you put out in the world, the more real stuff that you make that's actually going, getting painted on a building or...
Right.
You just get used to being disappointed constantly. Oh, I made this cross-hatching thing and they actually put it on their wall in white on black.
Oh, I love that one. That's the simplest one. Yeah, just reversing it out and be like, I made you two versions.
I sent them a... I made two versions, so you would never have to do that. And it was specifically in the thing I said, don't invert it. And that's what they did. So I'm just used to it. So whenever I see it, I'm like, oh, that figures. But
yeah, there it is.
And then some people just get it. I will tell you, like, we did this restaurant called Lowood in Oklahoma. And they sent me a photo of, like, this is the building we're buying. This is the... And I just put all the signage up, like where they're supposed to paint what, and all the windows. I just did it all on that photo, like a layover, like a mock-up. And they did it spot on. Like, it almost looked like the same photo when they sent it back. They're like, done. I'm like, what? And I was like, is that a mock-up? They're like, no. This is...
Those sign shops, man, they will take your mock-up and make it real before you, faster than you could actually send them files. They're awesome. But we got a guest coming up, I guess.
So is it Tabby or Taby, or how do you?
I think it's Tabby. We'll have to ask him. That's the problem with the internet. People butcher your name no matter how easy it is. And it's funny because my name is Jason and I get called Josh, Justin, or Craig. Welcome to the King's Cheese Podcast. We've got Mike Tabby in from, where are you at? In Austin, Texas?
Yes, sir. Currently Austin, Texas, as of about a year and a half ago.
Is that it?
Oh, it's that recent?
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell us, what are you doing in Austin?
Right now, I have a two-year-old son who is a handful and a half. But my wife and I moved here, like I said, about a year and a half ago to kind of, I feel like we did our due diligence with New York, you know, like we lived there, we did it for a little more than 10 years. We earned our little gold star badge of, we lived in New York City. And we really wanted to put down some roots, have a backyard, a dishwasher, you know, a fucking...
There you go.
Driveway and laundry in the house, like all of that seems like really amazing to have in your life when you've been living in a Brooklyn apartment for so long. So
yeah, where did you grow up? Where were you before Brooklyn?
Oh man, I grew up in a little town called Davie, Florida. It's Davie, Cooper City area. It's in Broward County, South Florida. So I lived there. And then I went to school in Gainesville, University of Florida. And then I took my first job in Orlando at an agency called Lure Design. And that's actually Karen, my wife, and I met. We met there. And then it's like probably TMI here, but we
want to know.
We met. Karen and I were screen printing together at Lure Design. I was screen printing majority of like the posters and the prints and things that were coming out. And she was a student at the time and was doing a program where she was coming in and sort of interning with us. And then that summer we needed help and we ended up hiring her to come on and help print through the summer. So we met and then kind of hit it off. And then later on, we kind of went our own separate ways. And then I think one day she kind of had messaged me and was like, hey, you know, like, what's going on? How are you? And I was like, oh, shit. Like, where are you? Like, let's get a drink. Like, let's go for a beer. What's going on? Let's chat. She's like, oh, I can't. Like, I'm in New York City. And at that time, I was totally surprised because I had actually just bought a ticket to move to New York City. And I was like, I swear to God, I'm not following you, but I actually have a ticket and I'll be there in like a week. So it was pretty rad. Like we got to rekindle our relationship once I got to New York. She helped me navigate. I got lost in the middle of Queens and she had to come find me. But yeah. So
Sounds like
we
a
went
little
from
New York fairy
so yeah
tale.
when is yeah when is Tom Hanks buying the rights to your
Yeah,
story
exactly.
so I can make like
It was awesome, man. Like it was super cool. We had, I had a buddy, it was like I had like one of my best friends, and we would every day it was an adventure of like, what are we gonna go eat next? It was like, let's go find the best pizza in New York, let's find the best barbecue in New York, let's find the best bagel, let's find the best sushi, and we would just go and eat through all of the things that people were raving about. And
Yeah.
it was super fun, man. Those first couple of years were like definitely idyllic New York vibes.
So you were basically living like a 90s rom-com with some bro elements to it to bring
Yeah.
in the dudes into the
Sounds
Definitely, man.
perfect. What was one of the worst things that you found? What was a dud on the sushi or the pizza? Like, did you find any that were just
Oh, God.
epic, like on the opposite end of the spectrum, or you only found the good stuff?
No. Okay, so worst thing that we found, it was actually in, I don't know if it was in Saturday Night Live or it was a 30 Rock. It was in an episode of 30 Rock, and they were talking about this restaurant called the Ninja Restaurant. And I was at the time, we were like, oh, this sounds amazing. It's like a ninja-themed restaurant. It's like a ninja-themed like sushi place. It's like, that sounds so cool. Like, let's go. And we at the time, my dad, my sister, my mom, like my sister's kids, like all came to visit New York. And we had this brilliant idea that we were gonna go and take them to the Ninja restaurant. Holy shit, this place was a clusterfuck, dumpster fire. Like, it was so cheesy. Like, it was like, I mean, they had these like secret hidden doors and like things when you come into the restaurant, but like, it was basically just like waiters dressed up like as ninjas who would like pop out of the corner and scare you, like literal boo scare
Right.
you, and then
You
serve you
poke
this like,
your own eye out with the
yeah,
chopsticks.
and then just feed you the most awful food. And it was so bad. And then they had like a straight up like street magician come into like the restaurant and go like table to table and like perform magic, and then would immediately afterwards like ask you for money, and you're like, wait, that's not part of the show, like you're not part of the restaurant, like what is this?
Wow.
Oh, my dad definitely like old school, and he was furious the whole time. He's notorious for being very, very judgmental about service at restaurants. And we actually took a photo at the end of the whole thing, and we were all like standing together, and my dad's face is just like super just angry, and he's just like looking down, and I was just like, oh my God, this was the biggest failure ever. But we still talk about how awful the Ninja restaurant was.
It turned into a great story, though. I
Yeah.
wonder if they
So
survived
had
COVID. That would be interesting.
the ninja restaurant, they had to have they're ninjas. They have masks on the whole time. So then how did you get into how did you start Two Arms? If so you're up there milling around New York and kind of doing your thing. Did it immediately happen or was that on down the road?
No, we were at the time Karen was working at a small agency in Soho. I bounced around a little bit. I ended up at Landor for a while, which was kind of like my first real experience with that like big New York agency vibe.
Sure.
I did that for about a year, and then Karen's agency was closing and was moving out to Long Island, and I wasn't happy with what was going on at Landor at that time, and we were both just like, why don't we try and do our own thing? Like, let's see if this works. Both of us were very hesitant, and we're like, man, this isn't gonna last. Like, let's give it a shot. Like, worst case scenario, we go get a real job, quote, real job,
Right.
at some point if we're not happy. And like year went by, 2 years went by, 3 years went by, and we were still doing it. And we were able to like make ends meet enough to live in New York and be comfortable. Now, granted, we weren't, you know, crushing it or nothing, but we did enough that we were really happy. So,
But you're doing like branding and screen print and posters
yeah. I mean, we
and
started on like, and I still have the table. It's like a little tiny plastic camping table that I bought at like Staples in Woodside, Queens. And we just had this little tiny table, and we each had like a little iMac, and we were just in Karen's apartment. Started it there. We had hit up a couple of different venues in town and like kind of pitched them the idea of like what rock posters were, and they were letting us do the posters. So we were screen printing in our apartment for a long time. Eventually we got studio space and proper equipment and drying racks and all that, but I still have photos of us like clotheslining it in the middle of our apartment with clips and all the prints and
Yeah.
laying stuff out onto couches and super DIY.
And this is in the heyday of like gigposters.com and Flatstock and all that when
Yeah.
it was
Yeah,
hot.
definitely, man. I miss those days. That was awesome.
No, I think anybody that's ever made a poster misses those days. So you did that for 10 years. Like what like that's a good run.
So New York was about 10 years. Two Arms was, let me think, was 2009. We started to about 2016. It's a little less, as far as like Two Arms the entity.
Yeah, because I remember I came on to like the social media design scene in 2010 or something, and Two Arms was already a thing back then. I
Yeah,
seem
I
to
mean,
remember that at least.
we tried. It's so funny with the people's perceptions of each other outside of this. Like, Two Arms was a thing. Like, for
Yeah.
us, we were like
It's just, yeah.
tiny, tiny little microscopic fish, you know, screaming in the void, trying to make work and be noticed. So I always get a chuckle when people are like, "Oh yeah, I remember Two Arms." I'm like, "Holy shit, you do?"
Yeah, perception is weird like that because it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, I see Two Arms mentioned a couple of times. I find their work and it's awesome, and now I've been following you for like almost 10 years. And back then, I thought you guys were the shit, but you were like just starting out, hustling and super DIY in that little
Yeah,
small
yeah.
apartment, and yeah, so it's cool to get like the perspective of how it really was.
Yeah, I mean, but we were at one point when we were in the apartment, though, it was pretty awesome, because we had the way that the apartment was set up. It's a railroad. Bricky used to come visit all the time, and he referred to it as the spaceship, because it's like one room leads to the next, leads to the next. There's like no hallway. It's kind of like pods, but the front room was really big. It had like nice big windows, and we had the whole office set up in there, where like the print table, the drying rack, two desks, everything fit like really nice and comfortably. So we were actually able to produce quite a lot of physical prints, like in a very small space. And then I ended up befriending this little print shop that was down our block. It's like super old school engravers print shop. They did like wedding invitations and like packaging and stuff for like Barney's and all kinds of weird shit. But the guy that ran the floor was super low key, and I ended up just making friends with him and coming in, and he would let me come in late at night to trim our prints. So
That's cool.
yeah, I would like stack everything up into boxes, put it on a hand truck, and I'm like carting fucking 200, 300 some odd prints like down the street in Brooklyn, like in the middle of the night, six pack in hand. And I would come in and be like, "Hey, what's up, dude?" Like, give him some beer. We would hang out. He'd teach me how to use the guillotine. Like, it was cool, man.
That was one of those old school, like you crank it down, or is that the like a automatic?
No, this was like the big ass pneumatic thing where you would like you two buttons on the
Yeah,
side and
yeah,
it's like and shit would
yeah.
come down.
And it's the most stressful thing. Like when you hit it, as soon as you hit it, there's no going back. And it's like all your work is about to get cut in half.
Yeah, man. He was definitely like very kind and gentle and patient with me when it came to teaching me how to like use it. But there were times where we'd have like I would gang run a bunch of weird prints together, and I'm like, would you mind doing this one for me? Because like I'm just really not confident in this.
That's a scary one, because you just think about flipping that print over and realizing that it was, anything but right. We kind of jumped ahead. There was a what happened at the like you said that you kind of burned out with two arms a little bit.
So the transition, kind of around 2016, Karen and I, we had been going full steam into two arms. We were printing product, we were selling stuff wholesale, we were doing all kinds of events where we would have booths and pop-ups where we were selling product. We were also managing our office and our own clients. So it was just a lot of work. And as much as we really loved it, we both just got real burnt out. We had a handful of junior designers and interns come and go. I was always trying to encourage them to move on to bigger and better things. So we couldn't really hang on to the help that we needed. So we kind of just hit a wall one day and we were just like, man, we don't have to do this. Like, this isn't the end all say all, the only option for us as designers. Like, at the time, when I had first started and I was working at Landor, I had met a lot of different people. And around 2016, I had hit up these other designers that I was friends with, and they had all moved on, and they were like art directors and creative directors at all these other agencies. So I was like, man, I have a really easy way of pivoting into freelance. Let me just give this a shot. Let's see how it feels, and we can take a break from two arms. And worst case scenario, if we want to do it, we'll just come back. So we did that, and it was like a year or 2 years later, I realized I was still freelancing. Like, when I mean freelance, I mean like freelancing in-house at agencies for project scopes. And it worked, and I was getting paid really well, and I was making all kinds of new friends, and I was getting challenged into these whole new projects that I would never have been able to get my hands on with two arms. So I really enjoyed it. And Karen had kind of done her own thing too. And it was kind of nice for us to both have ownership over our careers in a sense of like our own path. So we did that and we loved it. And, Two Arms has a very fond place in my heart, but I feel like we did it. It had its time, it had its path. I love hearing meeting designers who remember it, and it was respected in those ways, and I love that. But it was time, and we were ready to see what else we could do with our lives and our careers.
I had a two arm shirt. I think it had like a championship ring on it, or a couple rings and a skull or something like that. I'm pretty sure, like an
I
old
remember that
shirt.
one.
The skull ring.
I wore that thing
That was your
out.
signature thing for me. Like that's the one I remember most vividly from all that, the body work from Two Arms.
That's awesome. Yeah, that was the oh man, what did it say?
It might have said like Born to Lose or
Born to
something,
Lose. Yeah.
or
Yeah, that was
Live to
it.
Win.
That
It was the
one has
Born to Lose shirt.
circulated on the forefathers' mood boards for years.
That's awesome, man.
Right,
I'm really
so
happy to hear that.
I gotta see if I can find that. I know that I wore it to where I couldn't wear it out in public anymore, because it had like holes like on the seams, and it ran its course. Like I wore it out. So whenever you went, so you went back to freelancing, and that was going cool, and then you decided to just
Oh,
move to Austin.
yeah. Well, having a kid will do that to you.
Yeah, there's a wedding and a kid in there somewhere.
So Karen and I had a kid, Logan. He is awesome, and a handful and crazy and all of the shit that people say about kids. So we had a kid, and then I think it was just kind of this realization that I didn't want to raise my son in New York, you know? I love New York, and it again, we had our time there, and I think we earned the title of being New Yorkers, having been there for 10
Yeah.
years. But we were just ready. You know, I had said this before, but I was ready to have all the amenities and things that you don't get in a tiny little Brooklyn apartment. You're like living on top of each other,
Right.
and I wanted him to have a backyard and a bike and grass, and we have a dog, and I wanted him to have a backyard and grass and, you know, a life outside of cement and all that. And I don't know, as a when I was living in New York and I would meet or see kids on the subway, like riding the subway to school, I was always like, holy shit, how do they do that? Like, how are you that age and like you have that kind of wherewithal and exposure to the world around you to like be able to ride the subway to school? And I don't know, maybe it was just some of the kids that I would run into, but like the shit that would come out of these kids' mouths, I was like, oh my God. Like, you're in elementary school. Why are you talking like that? That's insane. It's like,
Dude,
oh, it's
I had the exact same experience when I like first moved away from my little small town. I moved to Stockholm, Sweden, and I stayed there for 2 years, and like after a year or so I moved out into like it's not the projects, it's between the suburbs and where the project starts. So it's pretty far out on the subway line. And the kids that were riding those subways, I felt the same way. Like, where's the teacher? Why aren't they smacking this kid in the face? Like, he's telling these, he's telling his, or she, or he is telling his classmates just go fuck themselves. And it's like, we had a pretty rough like repertoire between each other as kids, but not in front of the teachers, like on a field trip from to or from school or something. No, never. So yeah, I've seen that too, and I was amazed.
Yeah, man. I mean, I have friends that still live there, and their kids are great, and they love it, and they have, you know, that whole thing down. I don't know, I was just ready for that suburb life.
Yeah.
Even here, we moved to Austin, and you know, there's areas of Austin that are like super cool, and you know, the East Side, and it's got this like real rad vibe that Austin has. And we were both just like, nah, man, we're going south. I wanna like be next to the grocery
Yeah.
store. I wanna be in like a normal neighborhood. I wanna have that like fence, you know, like I just wanted all that in my life. And now we have it
Right.
and I love it. And I think back to like those times of being in that crazy, weird Brooklyn apartment. And I'm just like, man, I'm really glad I'm not doing that right now.
Just think of the poor bastard that's paying like 10 times as much for that same apartment now.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, I will say we lucked out. I did. I have fond memories of our apartment because we were in Greenpoint. It's my favorite neighborhood by far in Brooklyn. When we had first moved there, it was still predominantly Polish. Our landlords were super, super sweet. They were the cutest little Polish family ever. And we were in like a rent-controlled apartment. But we had moved in there around, I want to say, oh man, I can't even remember when we fucking moved in there. But we in the 4 or 5 years that we were in just that apartment, they didn't once raise our rent. So like we were paying some really low rent compared to some of our friends that were in the neighborhood. So that was one of the reasons why we probably stayed so long.
Sure.
It seems like so. It's 1.5 years ago.
Yeah, about
Seems like
just
you got out in time. So now
yeah.
people are fleeing New York.
Oh, I know, man. All of our friends have been slowly moving out. Like we had like kind of a core circle of people. I mean, like most people do. And
Sure.
I think there's maybe like 4 or 5 of them that are left out of the group that are still there.
So are y'all settled in Austin? Are you a Texan now?
Ah, man. So we honestly, I think once a day I have this conversation either with myself or with Karen. I'm like, we live in fucking Texas. This is weird. Am I a Texan? I'm not a fucking Texan. Like, we moved from Florida to New York, and I think there was definitely a long period of time where I was like, I'm not a New Yorker. I'm a Floridian.
Right.
And then you kind of make this weird change where all of a sudden, like, going home to visit family felt like you were leaving home. Like I was leaving home to go and visit my family, not leaving New York to go home and visit family. And there was a shift where I was like, okay, I'm a New Yorker now. I think it's going to be a long time before I feel like I'm a Texan.
Sure.
Yeah, I can see
Yeah,
that.
I know what you mean. I'm originally from Illinois, and so it's the same way. Like if I go back there, I don't feel like I'm going home at all, even though I grew up there. This is home to me. And so whenever I go back there, there's stuff I remember and can relate to, but there's as much as that I miss from here. And I was like, all right, I got to get back to Georgia, get home. So I've had enough Illinois for now.
How long you been in Georgia?
Since 98.
Oh
So I've been
shit.
here pretty much my adult life. I moved down here after high school, as a young punk kid. I moved down here just to get away from the snow.
Yeah, man, that's another thing. I will never, ever miss winter. Ever.
Fuck snow. Amir, you can keep it all.
That's why I'm trying to get out every year, like every November, December up here. I'm like,
You survived another one.
why am I doing this? I must be the dumbest man alive.
So you were just saying that you want to start an agency, you said. Like a traditional advertising
I want to
agency.
keep it forefathers, but like open up a whole. So like I'm the European division here, but I
Right.
think it would be cool to open up like a branch here, and like,
So you're kind of like one father.
yeah, but like having them on it for like project management and like just as we work now, but also have like, I don't know, have some sort of branch here. It would be cool.
What if
But
you just
I have no
shifted
idea
the.
how people do that. Like some people just, yeah,
Well, I
we
don't.
open up this agency and now we have like this whole floor in this building and we're and you look at
No, I
the,
don't either.
I don't get
I don't
it.
either. I heard Austin Dunbar say that in a interview where he said he was a freelancer and it wasn't going great, so he just started an
He just
agency.
started an agency,
And I was
hired
like, what
five
the hell does
people.
that work?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I couldn't get any presents for Christmas, so I just became Santa Claus.
A fucking awesome analogy. That's exactly what I'm thinking, because when we were, so I don't have the office anymore, but when we were like looking for ideas to what we wanted to do with the new office that we had, me and my friends, we were going around to people we knew, looking at their space just to get inspiration and ideas and shit. And we were invited to this agency, and I walk in, it's like 40 people working there, like there's shows around. Like it must have cost so much money to rent that whole floor and all these people working there. And I'm looking at their work and I'm like, how is this like generating so much that you can keep this whole operation going? I don't understand. Like I'm too dumb. If someone's listening and is like, oh, this is how you do it, you just call this investor and he will slap in a
Yeah,
I don't know how it works. I don't understand it.
I think a ninja clan is gonna get us in our sleep tonight because we're officially gonna be the first design podcast that's gonna say instead of quitting your job and working for yourself, we're gonna be like, how does a person that works for themselves build their own job?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like these are the secrets they don't want us to know.
I really don't get it, but I
I
don't
don't either. I don't
know.
know.
Some people just do
It's
it.
an interesting thing.
I mean,
They just do
I
it.
should just probably ask someone, how did you do this?
Ask, yeah, just go find a person that looks successful
Yeah,
and
but
say, how
some of
did
them
you do
don't
it?
even look successful. They look like bums, and they have like an agency with 10 people under them. I'm like, what? I've been doing this for 20 years. I couldn't hire one person. I couldn't afford that.
Well, it's funny that you say that because I've actually started hiring people.
You did?
Yeah, not like employees, but I have figured out through a couple of projects that if there is something that someone else can do to try to hire them to do it
Oh, you
instead of
mean
me
just
doing it. So
outsource a little bit?
sort of, yeah, but like freelancers and stuff. So if there's say like you draw a thing and then you've got to implement it or make something, so you gotta make brand standards for a logo that you just made,
Yeah.
right? Well, I mean, anybody could make the brand standards. You don't have to do that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not like Amira Unique is the only person that can make these brand standards.
No, I know what you mean. It's like, because I
so wouldn't it be better? Yeah. You move on to making the next logo and have somebody else.
But that's how Forefathers works, because we're such a small team that I'm just churning out the illustrations and the branding work. Yeah. And Matt's putting together the presentation, or John does that. We do it together, but like we create some mock-ups, but they create the presentations, they create the all the files. Like I just send them a big lump of like, here's all the branding files for this responsive brand, like 10 different lock-ups, and they just sort them out, have them color, black and white, blah, 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 blah. All the formats, PDF, AI, EPS, etc. But yeah. So that's how we sort of like divide it up. So I can just keep working on the next thing while they package it up. So I get exactly what you mean, but like,
that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to call my agency Stepfathers.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. We're going to take your brand to Disneyland on the weekends. That's what we do. I have a question. I wanted to ask you about something, because there is something else business related.
Yep.
You know, this episode is getting kind of design heavy.
This is going to be very design heavy.
This is, we're niching down into some nerdy stuff. Yeah. So anyway, I've been, when this comes out, I will have been working for myself for almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, I have not done any kind of pro bono or, free work. Yeah, I've got a business to build, and I don't want to have to go get a job, so I can't really commit to doing stuff for free. So
Except this podcast,
which I've, been guilted into doing, and you have leverage on me, so
yep.
I have to do it. So anyhow, I'm thinking about it, and there's been a few people that have hit me up, and it's people that I want to help, but with the COVID and all that, I don't know when my next dollar is going to be my last dollar.
Yep.
And so how do you figure that out? How do you figure out who you can help? Because I'm finding out through bidding on jobs and through putting stuff out there that there's a lot of people that do a lot of stuff for free.
Yeah, there's a lot. Like, especially
way more
now
than I thought. Like, way more than I thought. And I'm not talking about startups either.
Well-established people do a lot of free work because they...
Right.
I don't know. I think a lot of people feel that, if I do this for free, I can tell them it will be no revisions. It will be my way or the highway kind of thing. It's a one and done, and they get to sort of get a funnel, that creative side where they can just do whatever they want. I think they want to just build something. They want to put expand a portfolio piece with something that they really want to do, I guess.
I don't know. How would I myself do that? Like, what parameters should I? Because here's what I was thinking: if it's somebody I want to help, and I'm like, I'll do this for the minimal cost.
Yeah.
Right. And just be like, I can't do it for free because, again, my next dollar might be my last dollar, and I might really need it. So say that rather than spending a lot of time doing a concept that then I got to sell them on and, maybe twist their arm and be like, well, you got this for free, so it's got to be this. I just say, send me all your sketches and I'll kind of curate them, and let's work on this together on the front end. And then when we finally get it down on our phones or whatever, I'll sit down for an hour or two, make this mark for you and send it to you.
Yeah, I think, so this is how I look at it when someone's asking me, can you do this for me? I'm like, this sounds... kind of like, I don't know, this doesn't sound very good, but I look at people who like, who can I get something in return for these people, from these people at one point? Like, if there's someone that I can call in a favor from, then I'll consider it.
Right, but if you had somebody that, say that it was somebody that was, that you are getting a return from, say it's somebody that's mowing the grass outside your apartment.
Yep.
And the grass is always mowed, and it's always nice, and you're appreciative of them. And then they're like, hey, you think you could fix up this ratty logo we've got? And they're already mowing your grass.
Oh, yeah, I'll do that.
Apartment.
But just some random friend who's like, hey, I know you. Can you make my logo for my new construction company? I'm like, yeah, if you pay me.
Right. And
but
I
we're friends, yeah. So why don't you build
me
a house?
This is more like if a good cause... somebody that you want to help.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot of good causes.
I mean, there's a lot of good causes. I guess, I don't know. I look at my schedule because one thing I'm scared of that I've made this mistake in the past is like I say yes to something and then I have 12 paying clients that I have to pay priority to, and these people just get shoved to the back of the priority list and I'll never get to them and it's going to be awkward. Yes. So if I know I have time to do it, if I have some extra time and I feel like doing it, I'll do it. I don't know. It's just a case by case and I guess how I feel.
No good answer.
No good answer.
We didn't solve this one.
Didn't solve anything. No.
Nope. But we did establish that we both agree that there are a lot of people out there that do a lot of free shit.
Yeah. And established people as well. Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
I'm not going to say who. I was doing something.
Under Armour.
No, this is a designer I reached out to. And I was like, I would like to hire you to do something for me. Something I didn't want to do myself. Like, it was many years ago. And I was building something that never happened. But I wanted to, like, hire a couple of designers to work with me on it. And, like, two of them were like, I'll do that for free. Like, pretty respectable designers that you think are pretty busy. They just, you don't need to pay me. But I never got the product off the ground myself, so I never asked them to actually do it. If I had asked them and they would have done something, I would have had to do it. So that's why I held off, and I never found time.
Could you have got like a rain check from and got free work in the future? You think
maybe, or they were
that's what I would have tried. I guarantee that's what a lot of people would have tried to do.
Yeah, no, I just said, well, thanks for super appreciative. I'm just gonna wait for a better time to start this because I can't find the time to do it. And they were all cool with that, but.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm releasing a product soon, and I asked a couple of friends for help. They got the product, and they're designing something for it, like promo material for the product. I'm not gonna say what it is just yet, but
that's ambiguous. How many products could it be? Is it headphones?
No, it's a digital product.
Digital product.
Yeah, so it can't be too many things.
It's a mixtape.
It's a mixtape.
It's a mixtape.
Yep.
There you go. Mirror Uni's mixtape. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so if you ask people that you know that you're friends with and like, hey, I'll just give you this thing. Would you like to do some promo material for it? I think all of them said yes. But then you have all to like,
yes.
Some people say yes and then you don't get anything. And you have to be like, hey, sorry about that free thing you were going to do. Can you still do it?
Yeah.
And I know myself what some people have like, hey, can you do this thing for this thing? I'll give you the thing. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I forget. So,
well, I hope I get it, and I don't want to do any work for it.
Yeah, you'll get it. I think I already sent it to you. Maybe not. We'll figure it out. But you're definitely getting it.
It's a mixtape.
Is
it a USB adapter that flips over three times so you can get it in the right way?
Yeah, and it also has the ability to, in the future, it has a consciousness download capacity.
Which we'll never need.
Yeah, exactly. Someone will just hand you a baby, right?
Someone hands you a baby. Yeah. We've established that. That's established too. So, you know what you should do?
Yep.
This is what I would do.
Tell me.
I would, rather than trying to branch out forefathers and all that, I would just establish your forefathers as the HQ and make them the American division.
Yeah, that would be completely fucked up, but that would be funny.
Why?
Because they started it.
So?
Yeah. Exactly. So
you never borrowed something that you just kept.
Yeah, that's true.
You never went over to the neighbor and like somebody left Tupperware at your house and you just kept it.
I have so many t-shirts, sweatshirts, jackets.
Yeah, so you have my pants.
I don't. I left them.
You don't mind stealing my pants, but you won't steal a company.
I left them freshly washed and dried and ironed at Matt's place.
I quit wearing cargo shorts because of that.
Yeah. Well, me too for a while, but I started it up again this summer.
You stole the outfit off of my body. You just took the whole outfit off my body. I changed clothes thinking... So we had went out, hung out, and I needed to change clothes because I change clothes a lot. And Amir's looking at me and he goes, let me borrow this. And I was like, what I'm wearing? He's like, yeah, let me wear this. And so I took off my pants, I gave them to him, and he's like, the belt too. He wanted everything. He took my rings and jewelry if they'd fit. And so he puts on my clothes, I put on new clothes, and I was like, no big deal, I'll get them from him tomorrow.
But we
when
were,
I see
we him the next a, day... We were in a different city, in a different, like, from
yeah,
a different...
Yeah, so we were like at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he shows up the next day wearing the same outfit.
Just the pants.
And I was like, well, how am I going to get... I was like, how am I going to get my pants back if he's wearing them? It didn't bother him to take the pants off me, but apparently I won't just walk up to a Swedish guy and steal his pants, even though they're mine. And then the next thing I see is Amir getting on an airplane, flying over, waving at me, wearing my pants. But what's funny about it is that there are thousands upon thousands of pictures of Amir on social media
wearing the same pants.
Yep. Wearing the pants. I don't know how many pictures you took in those pants, but it's astounding.
At least 40.
At least 40. Yeah. And then you tagged me.
Yeah.
You should have tagged me, the pants, me and all of them. But no, I actually have not one time wore cargo shorts since then.
But I washed them, I tumble dried them, and I gave them to Matt, and he was supposed to give them to you. But
okay,
that never happened, I
guess.
So maybe Matt's
so let me ask you this. No, so let me ask you this. Do you think it's reasonable to steal a man's pants in Portland, Oregon, and then wash him and dry him in Atlanta, Georgia, and say that that's giving him back to me?
Yes, I think so.
That's reasonable.
Also, I bought you a nice sweater.
That's true. You bought me a nice sweater. That's true, but I think that that was just out of the goodness of your heart. That wasn't payback.
It was not payback, no. I had forgotten about
that. And I can tell you this, it would not surprise me if one day you steal that sweater off of my body. You say you look hot and I'm cold. Give me that sweater.
I always tell you you look hot.
You're like, I'll fold it and dry it and leave it in Orlando.
Yeah. That's where you can pick it up at Clark's house.
So you can pick it up just next time you see it. Yeah. Yep. So anyhow.
Yep.
This has been the best episode that we've ever done.
Without a doubt. Without a shadow of
a doubt. Without a doubt. We've covered so much ground here. I don't know what award they give out for podcasts, but...
But also, when you think of
that episode... Mail it to the American division, not the Swedish division.
Yeah, but also when you record an episode, you thought, oh, that was shit. And then you listen to it, it was like, that was pretty good. Maybe this is the opposite.
That's true.
We're going to listen to this, and we're going to be like, huh? This was awful.
What the hell
are we
talking about? Jeez, talking about starting jobs, not quitting jobs? Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
Yelling Wu-Tang and stuff?
Yeah.
Anyways.
He says and lifts his cup. Mine is empty now.
Yours is empty. We drink a lot of coffee on this.
We do.
Yeah.
The King's Coffee. All right, so.
As they call it in Sweden.
How are people going to find you online?
Oh, so follow me on Instagram, at Jason the 29th. And then I'm also on all the other stuff. I don't do Twitter. You do Twitter. I don't do Twitter.
I just look at Twitter. I don't even have my own name there.
So it's funny. I'm good at Instagram. You're bad at Instagram. You're good at Dribbble. I'm bad at Dribbble.
Yeah.
And then you do Twitter. I don't.
I don't do Twitter. Facebook? I just read.
Facebook?
I'm
do
on
you do
Twitter,
Facebook?
But I read.
Do you
Sorry?
Do Facebook, though?
Facebook? No.
Facebook.
No, fuck that.
No, I do Facebook.
I look
what
at
about,
it sometimes.
LinkedIn. LinkedIn.
I do LinkedIn. I'm not as professional as your LinkedIn because your LinkedIn,
awesome LinkedIn
is really... Really
game tight.
Game tight.
Yes. So put on a bow tie and get that LinkedIn page.
Yeah. We're going to talk a lot about one of these things next week.
Yes. Where are we finding you?
At GrowCase across the board.
Across the board. Just Google at GrowCase.
At GrowCase.
And one day we're going to figure out what these stupid names we have mean.
Or GrowCase.com. Yeah.
Oh, you have a website?
I do
too. JasonThe29th.com.
Yeah, so you're Jason the 29th across the board.
Yes.
Yeah.
Since 1994.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. The stupid names. Are we gonna save that for next episode?
People we'll save like, it for oh, next time. But anybody us. From anybody that derives from the 90s knows that everybody in the 90s had to have some alias. They couldn't just work under their real name.
Exactly. And all these millennials,
so,
they're all going
they
by their
understand.
Regular name.
Yeah, they're like Jeff and.
Yeah,
Susan.
Jeff Dorsey's Design Co.
Right, Susan Williamson
Lettering
Graphics
Co. Yeah.
Lettering Co.
Ugh.
Where they make H's out of pickles and flour.
Exactly.
And hey, we'll have some of them on the show too. We'll find out exactly
what. Yeah, we'll find someone who can make some spaghetti lettering.
Ooh, we should get somebody that can make us a King's Cheese logo out of King's Cheese.
Oh, that would be awesome. I think I know exactly who.
We'll figure it out. Yeah, we'll figure it out. Don't say that way when they have them on.
Exactly.
Yep.
I'm not gonna spurl it.
All right, buddy.
You want to do a thing?
Yeah, we keep screwing it up. The very first one was the best one.
Yeah, though. I don't know how we did it so well the first three episodes, and from now on we've just been like.
Okay, so here's what we got to do. Just don't. We don't have to do it together. Just say thanks, bro, and I'll just clip. And you can clip it out and just do it. So you just say thanks, bro.
No, let's do it together.
Alright,
otherwise it's not gonna be organic. It's gonna suck.
That's true.
Yeah.
Thanks, bro.